USA, USA, USA. That chant, rooted in patriotism as it may be, has always had an aura of arrogance about it. Now, emboldened by that buffoon in the White House, it's burgeoning and blatantly belligerent. To this notion, these chants boomed thunderously with any American player's collision. The smaller the opposing player, the louder the roar. Conversely, the Quebecois Canadians, ol, 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 parlayed freely now to all Canadians per provincial trade pardons, has always had a happy, festive element to it. Its infectiousness on occasion even inspiring an opponent's tight grin. I was fortunate to have been blessed with a ticket for hockey's Four Nations Championship game, Team Canada versus Team USA, playing primarily for percentage points per J.D. Prance's new sheriff in town's tariffs. As an aside, there, too, was some shinny of significance. Nexus Swift zipped me into Boston early on that Thursday, then, out again in a whirlwind before Friday had elapsed. On the eve of that one-game final, there was an ominous vibe where Causeway meets Canal, the streets around TD Boston Garden, brimming with America's new, strut and stride disorder. The overwhelmingly outnumbered Team Canada jerseys were jeered energetically with an aggressive in-your-face-ness per President Delirium Tremens 51st State. Sure enough, the hearsay in the streets hummed with speculation that DT was to attend, suggesting further that he'd preside over the ceremonial face-off. Alas, he was a no-show, apprehensive perhaps to some pervading anxiety per Bible Gate, allegedly held upside down. To be fair, consider for a minute how perplexing the right-side-up-ness of a plane, Black Puck could so clearly confound. Prior to the start of the game, I winced thinking back to how the Canadians got pounded by the Americans on that first Saturday of the tourney. That 3-1 score so flattered Team Canada, battered soundly, physically and statistically by Team USA. While it's silly to suggest that Canada's coaching crew took its tourney task lightly, it was a reprieve from their day job. After all, I've no doubt that collectively they were the second guy to realize that they were in a fight. Particularly discomforting had been the confidence of Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and, God forbid, even Sir Sid, seeming so significantly sagged. I couldn't shake an image I'd seen a few weeks back of American Jacob Trouba, then with the New York Rangers, dropping MacKinnon with a monstrous, open-ice hit. In the seconds prior to the puck drop, it suddenly seemed so symbolic, but more so, a bitter truth-telling. McDavid had seemed lost without his Edmonton line mate, Leon Draisaitl, appearing at first, frustrated, then aggravated, and finally, exasperated. All of his solo rushes, electric through center, were readily rebuffed at the blue line by the Americans' impenetrable, five-man defense. During that stressful first game I caught myself continuously searching the ice for stalwarts, Martin Brodeur, backing up Carey Price. Where were Weber and Pronger, and how about Ray Bourque and Rob Blake? At times, the vacant expressions on the Canadian players' faces had me wondering if they were seeking the same? Perplexing as well was Team Canada's decision to enter the tourney with a trio of backups in net. John Epstein, wearing his Montreal Canadiens toque while riding around Boston in frigid weather, was proud to be Canadian after our country's win at the Four Nations face-off finale in Boston. Supplied photo. Brady T. bruises another, raising more rousing, USA, roars from Donald's trumpets to and through the rafters. This, conjured images of the 1936 Berlin Olympics, an earlier era's roiling patriotism, with its exuberant Deutschland über alles no doubt inspiring Jesse Owens on to his 4 gold medals, to the furor of that day's furor. Then, at the 10-minute mark of the third, kudos to Coach Cooper for returning to his prescient premonition, reuniting Marner and McDavid. This, done on the fly with so much on the line, without the luxury of an off day to plan counters to an opponent's readjustments, that a best-of-seven series would have provided, was impressive. Then, as per, Eureka. Canada shouted as one, oh, so that's Cale Makar. There was Marner, in the midst of his patented, all-seeing glide, passing, as he does like no other, deftly setting up the tying goal, then, brilliantly, McDavid's overtime winner. That said, it was way too lazy, easy to award McDavid the game's MVP. Beyond a doubt, it was Binnington's goaltending that saved the Canadian bacon, which flavored nicely my mistaken words for his netminding. Post-game, the vacuity of the streets was Grand Canyon-esque, and totally quiet given Team USA's loss. This, fortunately so for obvious reason, but not so for allowing some uncomfortable reflection, then, the reality that set in. In spite of the hint of Hollywood in Canada's win, undeniably, the prevailing sentiment was only relief. Hockey has grown in the U.S., a sound echo of 1980's Miracle on Ice. Enrollments are up, enhanced by multiple Stanley Cup triumphs in all areas of the country, save for the Pacific Northwest. This pace, those successes, taken with that population mass of 340 million to draw upon, suggests that hockey's balance of power may have shifted. Foreboding, too, is American gold in three of the past five World Junior tournaments, especially in conjunction with a decline in Canadian enrollments. When's the last time you saw a Saturday afternoon road hockey game? Given the spectacular electricity of Game 1, and the overbearing political aura underlying it, the game's growth in the U.S. is likely to accelerate. Such wringing of hands, and gnashing of teeth. Please, is there any saving grace? Mays we, you see, post their terrific opening night tilt, we have Brandon Hagel, half the size listed in the roster, now averaging 20 minutes ice time per night in Tampa, while Matthew Tkachuk coalesces for 20 moons in Miami. Ah, yes, that size of the fight in the dog, thing, why of course. The next morning, I rented a bike and rode over to Fenway, waving wildly through the wind chill at grim-faced commuters from within the cozy confines of my key, Quebecois cap, that had so flambéed the Bostonians' ire. I thought of Coach Cooper savoring his post-game Molson Canadian, providing some pause for one to reposition one's brand preferences. Further to repositionings, how wonderful that Team Canada win for the cross-country and fervent flag-waving that it inspired. How timely a reminder that from far and wide the maple leaf encompasses all. Those broadcasts of Hockey Night in Canada, in Punjabi, the sons of Sisakamoose here, and Willie Aree's brothers there, and the rest of us everywhere. As per that matter of the 51st state, beware, there's been sightings of beaucoup de coureurs des bois près Trois-Rivières. You see, capture the flag's a contact sport up here. Oh. Oh. John Epstein is a former, 25-year Aurelia business owner who left Southern Ontario for the North years ago, and has never been back. He is now a freelance writer, whose column appear regularly in Aurelia Matters. He can be reached at j.epstein@rogers.com.